It's set in Morocco. It covers a number of themes: human relationship, jealousy, love, marriage, remarriage, and infertility and death, really. So it covers everything.
Being described as one of the most 100 influential people in a country is, of course, quite a high honour, but also a little bit of a burden, because it seems to me that you're supposed to be setting an example for people, perhaps. Why do you think this has been bestowed upon you?
I think it's my work in two areas, working in education and working as a writer and bridging cultural bridges across nations. But also I do interfaith work, leading to community cohesion and et cetera, et cetera. And it is sort of a burden, but on the other hand, it recognises what one has sort of worked and has achieved, and also my links with 2 or 3 countries, basically.
Our perception here in Australia of Pakistan, of course, is completely skewed by media reports, which always tend to concentrate on the most extreme things that happen. Yes. What's day-to-day life for women in Pakistan actually like?
Right. First of all, I need to tell you, I've lived in England for most of my life. And obviously it depends. I do go to Pakistan sometimes, and my view obviously is going to be skewed just as yours, because I don't live the real life. But then what is a real life? For a middle-class woman with a powerful job, independence, economically vibrant, etc., it will be a different kind of life. For another woman from totally different class living in a rural village, it will be a different sort of life. So generally, you can't categorize women and pigeonhole them as such. But generally, I would think, compared with England, the comparison there, there's more freedom, I believe, in England that we have. Women have more access to education, to equality. So those are the sort of things that I picked up and written in my own novel. The Holy Woman is my first one, where I talk about women being victimized by males. So that is an issue for me. And in the second one, Typhoon, which is a sequel to the first one, I talk about rape. And rape happens everywhere in the world. But imagine in a culture where you can't even talk about it. It's a feeling of shame. So these are universal topics, but I place them in a different culture, different country. And the latest novel deals with migration, generational gap, mixed race marriages. So again, topical issues, but relating to different countries.
England has a very large migrant population, of course, and so there's a lot of different communities and languages and belief systems operating within the community. Do you find it's fairly cohesive? Do you find that it is generally a fairly tolerant society?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. I think England is a wonderful place to live, and in Manchester, for example, I'll give that as an example, we are well-established migrant communities: Somali, Chinese, Polish, Bengalis, Pakistanis, Indian. We've been there for decades. We're well-established, well-integrated into way of life. And also, in England, tolerates it. It's a fair society. It celebrates diversity. It has laws against discrimination, etc. So all of that is a backbone to supporting migrants to settle in, which is great. Having said that, there's still Islamophobia, which is on the rise against Muslims. I'm a Muslim, and I hate it when people blame most Muslims against what the terrorists are doing. And I have to say to them, look, I'm a Muslim, I love my faith, but I'm not a terrorist, I'm not a suicide bomber. Please relate to ordinary, moderate believing Muslims across the world. So I do have to talk about that. It's extremist level at in any context, society, in any faith. But what I believe what's been happening with the Muslim is that all the Muslim population be tarnished with the same group. People don't seem to think, look, these are extremists. They don't. If men can kill women and children, do they have faith? Do they believe in anything? No, they're criminals, simple as that. So people need to differentiate between that.
Do you think that the media bears a lot of responsibility for building up this picture of demonising one particular faith group?
Absolutely.
As opposed to another?
No, thank you so much for mentioning that. I do believe my faith has been demonised. I do believe my faith has been hijacked. And I use my own literature, and this is one of the reasons why I've sort of given that title, is I use literature actively as my interfaith work to build bridges between nations. I say, look, relate to people like me. I do a lot of work in schools. I do a lot of work in Germany. And I know there's a lot of Islamophobia. But when people can relate to you, I'm the author that is studying a story called A Pair of Jeans that's being studied for many years in Germany. But then I'd also tell them, so look, I'm not just British, I'm also Muslim. You've got to relate to me. It's a way of life. So it's really raising people's awareness, educating them. And when you educate people, raise their awareness, you also get rid of some of the racism, the discrimination, the prejudices people have. And we are all victims of that. And I, too, myself, I'm a victim of that, because every nation is different, every race is different, faiths are different, and we have to learn about those. We have to learn to respect those faiths. So I often say to people, get out of your own boxes. We are cased in our own boxes of our own little world that we live in, whether it's to do with the society outside, whether it's to do with your faith or to do with your culture. But really, we need to look beyond our own norm and so look, there is another world out there, and they have a right to exist just as we have a right to exist. So it's understanding that part of the crux of my saying this is I live in the West, and often America and the West think their world is it, and everybody else got to fall into line with that. It's not. That is just one part of the world. There are other parts of the world, and we need to appreciate and celebrate diversity.
And you've chosen also the vehicle of the novel, that is a fictionalized account, to try and get across these very complex ideas. Yes, and do you feel that the people are more receptive when they read fiction and they can read a hypothetical thing and a story that leads them in, rather than reading something in the media about a particular family's case or an individual's case?
Absolutely, lovely comment, yes. I think literature, whether it's writing a short story or a novel or a drama, is a great way to get across your messages, and I do that quite actively in my novels. I talk about particularly women's issues, cultural, cross-cultural issues, and I think because people can relate to your characters, relate to the world that you created, then the messages sink in. But then I also, as a scriptwriter, I decide, well, how many people are going to read my books? In some nations, they can't afford books, they can't buy them, or the language is a barrier. But everybody in a developing nation like Pakistan, for example, watches drama. So I write drama serials to pass on messages like domestic violence, about dyslexia, about raising awareness about cancer, about women and work. And I do it through entertainment, because people are watching entertainment. They don't realize that the plot, the story, you're also filtering through your messages. So yes, the two go hand in hand, and it's much more entertaining because they're being entertained at the same time.
It's the time-honoured soap opera, of course, where people see their own lives reflected back to them and then can understand the situations more clearly that they're actually facing. Yeah. Can you actually use it, though, to affect social change, do you think?
I hope so, yes. I mean, one of my reasons I write has been to affect social change, particularly for women. I'm very much aware that I live in the West. I'm a privileged woman in the sense of I had access to opportunity, to education, to life and work. But there's thousands and millions of women across the world that don't have the same opportunities. So I've sort of devoted my life to literacy, promoting literacy, women's issues, and I do it actively through education because I work in education, lifelong learning, promoting particularly women and literacy. And I've worked for 15 years, opportunities for women, where I had women who had never written their name for the first time to actually being able to write their name is an achievement. So I quote to people, I say, look, for one woman, being able to write her name for the first time in another language is equivalent to another's PhD. How do you measure success? For this woman, it's a big hurdle. I remember my own mother writing in English, laboriously writing her full name, and we would watch and marvel at this, and she was just writing a name. Now, to you, it doesn't mean it. It's just, what? So what? But for her, it was an achievement.
It's a great achievement, and I think it's wonderful to highlight the difficulties that people face when they try and cope with new cultures, which, of course, is a subject that is very much in the news in Australia, where we are attempting to come up with more humane methods of dealing with refugees, leaving aside our record in that area. What do you think about the problem that on a world level we're actually facing, where we're going to get even more refugees in the future moving in large amounts around the globe? How can we effectively assimilate and help these people?
Because I'm not a refugee, but a migrant myself, I mean, I have benefited from migration economically, and I live it. I am an example of it. So I obviously welcome it, but I do realise that it can create problems, and I do realise there's a resistance. But then it's a real phenomenon. It's an international phenomenon. And there's the equality issue as well. As human beings, we want the best for ourselves. And if somebody thinks there's an opportunity, more money, more better lifestyle, or even running away from, you know, somebody's trying to kill you or something or other, then that person has a right. But then how do we cope with it as societies, as humans? So it's a real, there's no right answer. I can't give any right answers. Obviously, there has to be some sort of control, but it's the humane side of life as well. That still bothers me. And I'm a living example, not as a refugee, but as a migrant who has benefited from it. And, you know, it's been great. And I think a society that accepts you, enable you to grow, enable you to do well in life, and then also you contribute to that society, that needs to be appreciated. Most people who migrate actually work. They work and they contribute to those world. People need to remain keep that balance. And also I find life is so much richer, having so many people together in big nations, in big cities, together as well, because as human beings, there's so much to learn from each other, so much to see about each other. And I feel it's an enriching experience. And this is the message I'm always passing on. See diversity as an enrichment, not as a problem.